From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR correspondents from around the globe. I'm Kevin Beasley. This week, political corruption in China, providing security for foreigners in Algeria, and the feel-good factor in Mexico. China's new president, Xi Jinping, says one of his priorities is fighting corruption at all levels of government. Xi was confirmed in his new post during this week's National People's Congress in Beijing. But the new leader faces a tough challenge in his battle against graft, amid a culture of patronage and political connections deeply ingrained in the Communist Party. NPR's Louisa Lim reports now on how the murky side of Chinese politics was exposed in one recent political scandal.
Huang Yubiao is a real estate millionaire, once lauded on local television for shelling out to charity. But his largesse went further still. In January, he admitted to doling out $50,000 in bribes to try to win a seat in the People's Congress in Hunan Province. What's more, the 300-something people who accepted his money were all city Congress members. But he told NPR he didn't pay out enough.
Everyone was doing it. My bribes were the lowest, so I wasn't elected. They asked me to add money, but I didn't. They told me I couldn't be elected as I only paid $160 a head. It needed to be higher, maybe even triple that.
Now, a corruption investigation is underway. There's no way of measuring how prevalent job buying is. But it has a long history in China. Historian Zhang Lifan says the first recorded cases were in the Han Dynasty, 2,000 years ago. Nowadays, he believes such transactions are increasingly sophisticated.
Everything's for sale. Some people don't even use cash. I know that people who want to be legislators can just give an antique or a voucher to whoever's in charge, or even help their family members go overseas to study. There are all kinds of transactions.
As China changes its leadership, personnel changes are happening at every level of the system. This is when post-buying is at its most serious, according to anti-corruption expert Ren Jianming from Beihang University. One example is a man named Hou Wujie. Chinese press reports say the day he was dismissed from his post for corruption, he promoted more than 100 officials. He was sentenced to 11 years in jail, but was released on parole after serving just 5. Ren says the most expensive posts are those with clear money-making opportunities, like the power to approve land deals or dismiss police cases.
Being a Congress member isn't the main aim when it comes to buying jobs. It tends to happen most in posts that are high value, like party secretary, city mayor, or police chief. They carry many benefits.
I show him a job menu circulating online. It's a list of how much it cost in 2006 to buy a job in one city, Chengzhou. $300,000 could get you county party secretary. For $250,000, you could be county police chief. Ren believes the figures to be reliable, but says it'd cost more nowadays. The security of a state-affiliated job is a big pull. Anecdotal evidence now suggests there's a price for lower-level jobs too, like doctors' jobs in hospitals or even a staff job on the subway. Corruption, he warns, is everywhere.
It's not just corruption of the bureaucracy. There's corruption in every field. In medicine, there are kickbacks and packets of money passing from patients to doctors. Even in education, parents know how to cement relationships with teachers by giving gifts. These things pollute kids when they're very young.
This video, shot by a Chinese newspaper, is ample proof. The reporter's asking 6-year-olds what they want to be when they grow up. A pilot, says one girl. A firefighter who helps people, says the little boy. I want to be an official, says this boy. What sort of an official, he's asked. A corrupt official, the little boy says, because they have lots of things. Even 6-year-olds know what corruption is. One of China's most famous playwrights, Xia Yexin, now warns the system itself is in danger.
If it continues like this, if China doesn't carry out political reforms or constitutionalism, then it's not far from collapse.
That corruption threatens the existence of the party is universally agreed from the top down. China's new president, Xi Jinping, has started his own anti-corruption campaign, threatening to go after the big players, the tigers as well as the flies. It's a matter of political self-interest and survival for China's new leaders. The problem is how to root out corrupt officials when so many are quite literally invested in the system. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
Coming up, providing security for foreigners in Algeria and the feel-good factor in Mexico. Ever since Islamist extremists seized an oil and gas facility in the Algerian desert last January, foreign companies operating there have been worried about keeping their workers safe. That challenge is made more difficult by the war in neighbouring Mali. Eleanor Beardsley visited Algiers and filed this report.
The kidnapping and execution of dozens of foreign and Algerian hostages at the In Amenas gas plant sent shivers as far as the country's gleaming capital on the northern Mediterranean coast. Austrian telecom company Capsch has a subsidiary in Algiers. Like other foreign companies here, it operates from a villa behind security gates. Canadian Etienne Legendre is director of the company's Algerian operations. He says after the incident, Capsch put a halt to all personnel travel within Algeria.
And they were even considering repatriating me, which I found a bit silly at one point, because here in Algiers, the life has not changed really much. We didn't feel the event here in Algiers. I cannot say that I've seen more police or more roadblocks than usual. And the general feeling of my Algerian friends was that this event was very localized in a remote area.
It's true, the streets of Algiers were crawling with police and there were road checkpoints everywhere well before the attack in the desert. The heavy security is a consequence of the brutal civil war between the military-backed government and Islamist militants during the 1990s. Today, Algeria, with its vast oil and gas wealth, spends far more than any other African country on its police and military. But since the attack on the In Amenas site, many foreign companies operating here have brought in their own experts to reassess security. But foreign security personnel are what compromised the site in the first place, says newspaper editor Mounir Boujama, who tracks jihadist movements.
British Petroleum, which ran the site, hired a French security firm. They were among the best in security, but they didn't know the environment, so they weren't able to properly vet their employees and check their connection to Islamist networks.
Boujama says many of the Islamists who carried out the attack at In Amenas fought the Algerian state in the 90s. Consequently, the Algerian government knows them and has vast intelligence on the different Islamist figures and networks operating in the region today. The Algerian military and police control the two outer rings of security at all of the country's energy sites. The innermost ring of protection is operated by the company running the site. Boujama says the terrorists worked for years to infiltrate that inner ring. He says the informant was most likely a young driver.
The terrorists knew exactly how many foreigners there were on the site and where they were located. So there absolutely was complicity from the inside in planning this attack.
BP has since changed its entire security team at the site. Boujama says there is talk of enacting a law that would allow only Algerian private security firms, which would be privy to government intelligence, to secure the country's energy sites. Analysts predict there will be more attacks like the one on In Amenas because of the war next door in Mali. French involvement in Mali against Islamist militants has given the disparate groups of bandits and jihadists roaming the desert a new cause, says Mohamed Shafik Mesbah, a retired Algerian colonel who fought the Islamists in the 1990s. Mesbah says a traditional army cannot beat a guerrilla force.
C'est que l'armée française est en train de libérer.
When the French army arrived in many of Mali's cities, the terrorists had already gone, dispersed in the desert. They will wait and come back when the French leave. We're seeing a regeneration of the terrorist movement into a new form in the Sahara and Sahel region of Africa, and I think it is durable for the near future.
Both Mesbah and Boujamaa say the only way to beat the African terrorists is to deal with the root of the problem, which is Libya, not Mali. They say the uncontrolled borders, lawlessness, and flow of arms since the dictator Muammar Gaddafi was killed is feeding a new spring of jihad in North Africa. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News.
Mexico's new president has now been in office for 3 months. During the election, he promised to fight drug violence with new strategies, but there are no signs that problem has improved. Instead, the president prefers to focus on Mexico's economic potential, and as NPR's Kari Khan reports, he's kept up a busy travel schedule, singing Mexico's praises at home and abroad.
On a recent presidential trip to the Pacific state of Sinaloa, a smiling Enrique Peña Nieto gets a warm greeting from hundreds of farmers and businessmen gathered in front of a picture-perfect cornfield.
Muchas gracias, muy buenas tardes a todas y a todos ustedes.
Peña is in the state promoting its agricultural industry.
Tengan certeza. Tengan confianza.
With an ease not often seen on the campaign trail, Peña tells the crowd, have faith, have confidence in me, your public servant and the government. Together we will work to bring progress and development to Sinaloa. This is Peña's standard pep speech. In his first 100 days in office, he's given one in almost every state. He's the country's nonstop cheerleader. He's even taken out radio and TV ads.
Hasta llevar a México a donde se merece, a un mejor futuro.
The stylized black and white spots show a man jumping back and forth between famous Mexico City landmarks, while the narrator says, we are all going to take Mexico where it deserves to go, to a better future. Peña Nieto's feel-good campaign has been working. He's been praised in the international press with glowing reports of Mexico poised to become the economic Aztec tiger of Latin America. Peña Nieto's own popularity is growing, too. What you don't hear him talk much about is the country's violent drug war, which is still as vicious and deadly as before he took office. The same day he was talking about corn and shrimp in Culiacan, home of the notorious Sinaloa cartel, 7 people were kidnapped and murdered in the state, 4 of them local policemen. On the airport runway after touching back down in Mexico City, I asked President Peña why he doesn't talk more about controlling crime in the country. It's a subject that the government must address, Peña says, but he adds it's not the only one to talk about. He says his government plans to create a new 10,000-strong national police force, but that will take time to form, and in the meantime, Peña's strategy remains largely the same as his predecessor, which left the military in charge of fighting drug traffickers and a hefty death toll, more than 60,000 in the past 6 years. Repeated requests to speak with Peña Nieto's national security advisor were denied. Denise Dresser, a political analyst, says Peña is masterful with the media.
He's managed to change the topic and change the conversation so that the headlines every day are no longer decapitations, the war on drugs.
Instead, they are about progress and optimism, she says. Peña has had some successes out of the gate. He wrangled a political pact with opposition parties to reform the monopolistic energy and telecommunications sectors. He passed a huge overhaul of the nation's failing education system, then the next day arrested the long untouchable head of the teachers' union on organized crime charges. That move alone gave him a huge popularity boost. Public opinion pollster Ulysses Beltran says Peña Nieto's ratings are in the high 50s. Not bad, considering he was elected with just 38% of the vote.
He has very good rates in general, but the Mexican public is now, fortunately, hard to please.
Mostly, Beltran says, because the recent economic gains in Mexico have yet to trickle down to the majority of the population. More than 60% of the public say they are not optimistic about Mexico's economic future.
A critical, skeptical public is better, and that is very good for democracy.
And he adds, isn't that a good thing? Kari Khan, NPR News, Mexico City.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. You'll find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Beasley.